SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races. Hour three, we'll call it. Close enough. And Dave Grenig of the Daily Racing Forum joins us ahead of the Whitney. Just talked to Lonnie Goldfeder and got some opinions on the handicapping front. We'll get some from Dave as well and also catch up on the news. Dave, good morning.
Dave.
It's Hall of Fame Day, and I've been kind of watching and waiting for some word as to whether they're going to be able to run that Hall of Fame stake on the grass.
No word yet. They, you know, the rain that they keep saying is coming hasn't really come yet. We had a little shower earlier. I don't say little. It was a little steady. Did about 15 minutes of rain. They had the turf works, no problem, in Oklahoma. A bunch of, say, 50 or 60 there. They only have two scheduled for the turf today. I'm wondering if they did that by design, which would be giving them an awful lot of credit. Maybe one on each course. So I don't know. It's, we'll have to see how hard, if at all, that rain comes.
Well, and the fact that the racing office and Glenn Kozak have waited this long, it kind of tells you that, you know, they're watching the and tracking whatever these storms, wherever they're headed. You know, Dave, the later they arrive, the more they threaten the even bigger card tomorrow.
Correct. Yes, you rather, if this is going to come, I would agree with you. Let's come and get here and get out so that we can. You know, tomorrow's not totally impacted because of, you know, a lot of good racing tomorrow.
Let's talk about some of it immediately. And the most intriguing story, of course, when it comes to the Whitney, going in, it was going to be the stretch out of Mind Your Biscuits, and then came Rick Violette and Mr. Evans pitching a tent with Diversify.
Yeah, this wasn't their plan. I talked to Rick a couple times immediately after the Suburban, and, you know, came back a huge number both on buyers and rags and all that stuff. And I thought the prudent move was to skip the Whitney and went for the Suburban. But the horse showed him all the positive signs, ate well, trained well. They do a lot of, they take blood work, you know, I guess they monitor this horse's blood work a lot. And by the way, that rain that we were talking about, no, it's not rain, it's just a golf cart coming up behind me. They monitor his blood work, and, you know, it seems good. And look, it's $1.2 million. You go from not being in the race to being the favorite for $1.2 million, you gotta give it a shot.
What are your thoughts on the Mind Your Biscuits stretch out?
I didn't really understand it until I saw Imperial Hint run the way he did the other day. and Chad Summers, what he said was, would you rather run against Imperial Hint for $350 or run against these horses for $1.2 million? And after I saw Imperial Hint run the way he did the other day, I'd rather run against these horses for $1.2 million and give it a shot. What have I got to lose? If it doesn't work, maybe you don't have time to run back in the forego. I don't know. It depends on what kind of race he gets. You know, he'll have the opportunity to either do that or go to the Kelso or whatever he wants to do. Do I think he's going to be successful around two turns? I do not, but that's just a feeling on my part. I just, you know, the horse is so in tune to what he does and what he does so well that to throw him now something different, I just don't know how they react to it. And at the price he's going to be, I would steer clear. And I hope he proves me wrong. I like the horse. A cool horse. I mean, his races this year, I know he's only 1-for-3, but these races that he's running this year have been pretty, you know, especially even that mile, losing that race, that was a heartbreak.
Absolutely. And, of course, the one-turn mile at Churchill this year for the Breeders' Cup, and you get the sense that ultimately is where he's headed when the dust settles in November. Got to bring up a participant in this race that has, I think, wormed his way into a lot of people's hearts as a hard trier. And Discreet Lover, and you alerted me to the story you were doing about Uriah St. Lewis, and it's absolutely the kind of story that just you love to read. And tell everybody the backstory, what I call, yeah.
The guy, Uriah St. Lewis, came over here when he was about 15 years old from Trinidad and Tobago, and he moved to, and he had family in Brooklyn. He got, you know, he went to a high school near Aqueduct, and he liked the horses. The family liked the horses. He used to run track, and he ran from Aqueduct, from East Vocational Tech High School, which is about 3 miles, three and such miles from Aqueduct. He used to run, sneak in, place bets, run back. He studied computer tech. He was like a bit of a computer technician and worked for AMTO, and he liked to gamble on the horses. And his wife one day said, well, you really don't even know enough about these horses. Why don't you learn something about them? So he did. He moved to Oklahoma, met up with a trainer out there, learned about the business, came back and said, you know what, I'm going to start training horses. He didn't have a lot of success, but he found this horse for $10,000 at the Timonian sale a couple years ago. And the horse has cranked out $820,000. He never misses a dance. He's run 28 stakes. Now, I know he only won the one at the Excelsior, but it really sort of started a pattern of, you know, the Charlestown Classic probably didn't work out for him, but it didn't work out for the Diversify either. But Pimlico Special, Met Mile, Suburban were all solid enough races. The horse has earned over almost $300,000 this year. And the guy's 60 years old. He owns him himself with his wife. He's got his daughter and son involved in the business. And they're having a good time doing what he likes to do.
Well, I called him the Trinidadian Bobby Frankel, who pretty much did the same thing.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of neat, you know. The horse, I think he even got banned off in the Suburban, but it was more of in the Metropolitan, but it was more of a heat issue than anything else from that race. And then he came back a month later, and then, you know, he ran a respectable third in the Suburban. Really. You know, one horse really ran his race in the Suburban. That was the winner. And he got beat two lengths for a second in a $750,000 race. And the horse's numbers are the best they've ever been. So why not take a shot? And he's got a little karma from the sense of, he used Jose Flores, the jockey who died earlier this year. And, you know, the first race after Flores passed away was the Excelsior for this horse, and he won it. With Manny Franco aboard, and, you know, it's kind of an odd thing, but I mean, he says some of these races that the horse's lines don't look so good in. He says he doesn't know if the jockeys are really trying because it was who he is. You know, it's Ryan St. Lewis. What do I, you know, I want to make sure I get around here safely. This horse is a long shot. I mean, he's been, there was one race, I believe at Parks a couple of years ago. This horse was 238 to 1. I mean, they bet $6 on the horse.
Yeah, I see it. I see it. And, you know, you bring up Flores, and they're running at about 4 o'clock tomorrow, the Jose Flores Memorial. Nice race, too. Came up very good for three-year-olds, 6.5, fillies.
It did. And, I think it took a couple of our test horses. I think Ed Coletti was thinking about the test, and then I guess backed out of it, and he's running a couple of horses in that race that you just mentioned.
Well, who else in this Whitney caught your attention? If you had to, commit, and we've seen you go to the windows.
If I go to the windows in this race, I think I'm going to go to Backyard Heaven, depending on his price. His allowance win at Aqueduct and his Ali Sheba were very solid races, you know, from his standpoint. I know the fields weren't so, you know, totally great, but they were really good races. Set him up. He went off at 4-5 in the Stephen Foster, and he just didn't run this race. I mean, he was folded up by the quarter pole. The heat got to a lot of horses that night. Maybe he was one of them. If he is, you can draw a line through it and go back to his two or three previous races for that. And I think he fits. And I guess they made him 9-2 in the morning line, and I would take every bit of that. So I'm willing to give him another chance. It's interesting with, people look at Taprit, but, you know, don't discount Good Samaritan. Good Samaritan did win the Whitney here. Did Jim Dandy here last year. He's been training pretty well. I know he didn't really run his race in the Met Mile, but I didn't quite get the Met for him either. Anyway, I mean, he was, you know, I don't view him as a one-turn horse. I think he's a two-turn horse. And, you know, his Jim Dandy was solid. And he might, you know, if they get cute up front, you know, diversify Dalmore, throw in someone else, maybe even, you know, Backyard Heaven joins the mix. Tappert, I saw quotes from Todd Fletcher yesterday saying that he's better when he's in the mix. And, you know, he was up close in the Belmont. So, you know, you could see a little, you know, jostling up there, and then Good Samaritan laying back there and then saying, see you guys. So I think it's a kind of a fascinating race. A lot of storylines, as we've talked about. You know, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's not a killer division this year, but someone's going to emerge as the leader, and I think it'll come out of this race.
Talk about the test, Dave, as well, and just had Lonnie, and we capped. This is a interesting group, and the pace is a little interesting. If nobody goes with Mia Mischief, she's going to be dangerous up front.
She is. You know, what happens from, you know, the Mischief and Classy Act sort of went at each other in the victory ride, and I'm not sure either one's going to give up a quarter here. It's sort of like it's the way they like to run close up. I'm sure they're going to try to avoid a pace battle, but I don't know if that's possible. I mean, they Classy Act inside of Mia Mischief, and if they go at each other again, a Minute to Stardom is going to be very close too. And, you know, look at Separation of Powers. If she stumbled last time, she lays close as well. So it's going to be an interesting cat and mouse game between these riders on how the pace sets up in the race. And, sort of a wild card here, I guess, is Alter Moon, having come up from Florida after being sold. Well, when Florida threw the sales ring in Kentucky, I believe it was $675 that Peter Brandt paid for her at the sales, and then turned her over to Chad. And I think they sort of wish they had a little bit more time with her to get her ready for this. But, you know, this is when the test is, so you got to take a shot. And don't forget your Ryan St. Louis. He's in this race, too.
That's right. Norma's Charm. Go to the outside. Buzz and conversation about Minute to Stardom. I'm looking forward to some Clocker Report news from those local appearances. I think Mike must have written those up.
Yeah, I mean, they don't look anything special on paper. I did see that there was one work where she worked in a trio of horses. I believe that was the 49. It was, you know, she basically stayed with the one. She worked with the horse that was in front. They were in front of another horse that didn't catch them. So, look, she's been very solid. She just hasn't faced this type of company before. But, you know, what she's done so far, you can't knock. And maybe she steps up and does belong in this group. Louisiana Bred by Star Guitar, I don't think they had that in mind when they made the test. But, you know what? She's shown that she belongs so far.
A nice group, and the other of the Grade One action on Saturday, that'll be televised on NBC. The uncertainty about the grass course, obviously, we got to deal with, and the Weya, the Lure, the De La Rose, and we should mention see your piece about Voodoo Song. We just talked about Voodoo Song, and it looks like Linda Rice is committing to scratching tomorrow and trying the four-star Dave.
Absolutely going to happen, because she just worked about an hour ago on the turf, or he worked on an hour ago on the turf. So, yeah, Voodoo Song will definitely not run in the Lure. They're going to point for the four-star Dave.
A couple of highlights.
I don't have a problem with that.
No. Well, especially... Although the horse like him on off going on off turf can be very tough to catch. I mean, the horses don't quicken on off going as easily. Trying to chase.
Correct. Look, I think Linda's problem. I'm guessing that Linda's biggest concern is having to run against Heart to Heart, because those two could get out there and set it up for somebody from behind. I don't know that either one. I don't know that Brian Lynch is really excited about running against Voodoo Song. I'm sure Linda Rice isn't excited about Voodoo Song against Heart to Heart.
Well, although I will say this in advance, Heart to Heart has now, with added maturity, he's now showing the ability to sit off of a target That may work out fine.
Well, that could work out. We'll see how they draw and how it shapes up moving forward.
Speaking of targets, a glance, I didn't talk the De La Rose with Lonnie. Well acquainted. Clyde Martin training for George Strawbridge, and well acquainted is going to be on the lead in the De La Rose. Maybe one of those situations where she goes out and, you know, has a 10-12 length lead early.
Yeah, that kind of often skews the race, right? So, you know, you got to have to hope that these guys are paying attention and, you know, time it right and don't get too cute. But I think that a horse like Pursuit is very interesting to me from a standpoint of she hasn't run in a year, over a year. She did win a Group 1 in May of 2013 on soft ground in France. I'm not sure, you know, what her running style will be. She'll be fresh, but she's been training lights out. Udi's coming back off, you know, having shipped out to California, got sick and scratched. It's an interesting spot. Whether Clyde Martin is silly is good enough to take them all the way remains to be seen. I would tend to bet again.
We've got two-year-olds that dot the card as well. And before we wrap, any thoughts on that sixth race? The boys going 7 furlongs. Point of humor, Brian Lynch working up a storm. You've got Business Cycle coming back for Chad Brown. These are olders. These are not two-year-olds. It's an interesting group of horses that had different things prevent them from getting their career started. And then the seventh is the two-year-old group.
The sixth race, look, I think this is one of those races where, you know, horses that have been out, I liked Hirsch's race for a trainer that a lot of people probably don't know, Dermot Magner, who did once work for Chad. Also, Ilu Dare was working up a storm before his debut. I would give him another glance. I think I would take the horses that have run. You know, Business Cycle obviously also ran once. So we'll have to see how well Chad has him ready. He did work very well from the gate. The two-year-old race, I was not expecting Cousin Pete to be the one that Todd was going to run here. I think we talked about this at the beginning of the meet, that he had said that the horse from the horse he was going to run on the 4th of August was sort of the horses that he hoped would do well to run in the, maybe the hopeful toward the end of the meet. So I didn't have Cousin Pete as that one. A Chief Executive, I thought, might be the right one in there. He worked today. I would look for him pretty soon. Fullness of Time's been training well. And this race, you know, Justice of War, another Asterison horse that you can't ignore any of those that come out. $550,000 horse purchase. I just worry a little bit about the rail. But, you know, Asterison's done such great work with the two-year-olds this meet that, you know, you gotta pay heed to that.
Agreed. It's been remarkable, really, every level. The claimers, the stake horses, the maidens, and everything from the Asmussen team just firing on all cylinders. And he's sitting behind Chad after the first 12 days.
So is everybody else. He's closest to him.
12 wins for Chad going into today, 10 for Asmussen, 7 for Mott and Pletcher. Those are your leaders. Dave Grenig is your leader when it comes to the news from the NIRA circuit. Dave, I appreciate it, and let's hope we can stay as dry as possible over the next 24 hours or so.
Yeah, so far, I mean, maybe, you know, hopefully the weathermen keep their record intact.
Their record of ineptitude.
Yes.
Exactly. Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig. And stay on top of all the news in New York with DRF Grenig. Dave, thanks. Taking a break here. And when we come back, we've got 20 minutes. And we've got to get to both Tom Quigley and James Scully. So stay with us. And then Robin Howlett is going to join us. And Robin, with his interesting experiment after a couple of years of building a program and building a platform that he called Handy Capper, H-A-N-D-Y, Capper, that was basically a hunt and peck or a search and find system utilizing charts, and the subsequent story that has come out of it with Equibase asking, apparently politely, that he basically desist. And we'll talk about that experience with Robin and on a further basis probably next week about the use of data and what, you know, who owns what and what should be, you know, freely available to the public. And it's a tricky issue. Anxious to get Robin's thoughts. He'll join us in a little bit. But first, visit with Tom Quigley. Quigley's Corner. We'll get some plays from Delmar from Tom. And Scully will look at West Virginia and Ellis Park. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is Express Bet Summer Treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with Express Bet. And while you're at it, don't miss Express Bet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool Fun in the Sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete Fun in the Sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Taking you inside the sport of kings, it's At the Races on Sirius Sports. Here's your host, Steve Vick.
Where the turf meets the surf, down at Old El Mar. Take a plane, take a train, take a car. There's a smile on every face, and a winner in each race. Where the turf meets the surf at Del Mar.
Well, there you go, Der Bingelhofer, giving you the Del Mar intro to Quigley's Corner. And watching the Quigley's Corner Twitter feed, I see the birthday greetings went out from Tom. It's Johnny D's birthday, and it's Paula Gary's birthday as well. So best to Johnny and to Paul. And, of course, mentioning Johnny, XB Johnny D, reminds everybody, Fun in the Sun this weekend. Another 10 races from Saratoga and Del Mar, $10 win bets, week 3. So make sure you get involved. This is probably, as Johnny said the other day, probably the last chance. If you're looking for the end of season prize, you got to get involved this week. Tom Quigley might give you some help on those Del Mar races as well. Tom, good morning.
Steve, good morning to you and all the listeners. It's funny, Johnny D is having fun in the sun on his birthday. He's actually out here at Del Mar celebrating not only his birthday, but his mom's 80th birthday, who lives in the San Diego area. So he's a busy man. I believe he's golfing right now, believe it or not, on his birthday. What better thing would he want to do other than that? But I know we'll see him out at the track. 4 o'clock first post West Coast time, 7 o'clock your time today, 4 o'clock Friday here at Del Mar. And, of course, big news, pick six carryover. Nowhere else in the country do players have pick six fever like they do out here on the West Coast. $78,000 carryover, $214,000 jackpot single ticket carryover. That'll be on races 3 through 8, Steve.
Well, and then into the weekend, Tom, as well. And we talked already with Hammer and with Jay Privman about some of the great results, particularly the two-year-olds, Baffert, one from each column, male and female, Roadster and Chasing Yesterday. We got another set today, tomorrow, and Sunday. It includes lots of good two-year-olds. Sorrento on Sunday, the Yellow Ribbon on Saturday. Some thoughts about the 2 days of action.
Well, you know, you mentioned the two-year-olds, and some of the big guns aren't even running. Mother Mother from the Bob Baffert barn, Brill from the Jerry Hollendorfer barn. So far, a lot of talented two-year-olds have been showcased, not only here at Del Mar, but also over at Los Alamitos. The Instagram comes to mind as well. So look forward to seeing those runners, perhaps both in the futurity and the debutante. But the Sorrento on Sunday, Steve, interestingly enough, you know, that race does have some history. Last year it was won by Spectator. Of course, you're going to see her tomorrow in the test in your neck of the woods at Saratoga. The year before it was won by Champagne Room. All she did was win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly race at a big price, I believe around 35-1. You go back a few more years, Executive Privilege won for the Baffert team. That's a half-sister to Opportunity. And then you go way back in time, Chaluki and Silver Bullet Day. So the Sorrento, not a household name around the country in terms of a noteworthy stakes race, but historically it has proven to be a good race. And I've taken a quick look at the past performances. What an interesting race this is. It goes as race 8 on Sunday. And we have shippers coming in from all over the place. To give you an idea, a shipper from Arlington Park, a shipper for Wesley Ward from Keeneland, a shipper that's transferred into the Phil D'Amato barn from Churchill Downs, and a filly from Hastings that's undefeated in her two career starts, breaking her debut in a maiden special weight and then beating the boys in a stakes race up at Hastings. It's a real interesting grab bag of shippers and local runners in the Sorrento this Sunday out of Del Mar.
In addition to that group, we've also got two-year-olds, mostly first-time starters, on Saturday. That's the seventh race going 5.5. And I see that Samantha Siegel has got a horse in the Mandela barn, Extra Hope, a Shanghai Bobby homebred for Samantha.
Shanghai Bobby doing exceptionally well as a early freshman sire. He's had a few wins already out here on the West Coast. You don't see many of his runners out here. And Samantha Siegel, like you indicated, primarily was using Ron Ellis for a long time, and about for the last year or so has been exclusively using Brian Corner. So she's obviously got a lot of runners from around the country. And, you know, it's just like diversifying in the stock market, Steve. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. And we see that with a lot of owners. Gulliver Racing comes to mind. He has horses with, you know, and he owns Champagne Room, trained by Peter Erton. But he's also got horses with Bill Morey and Jeff Mullins. And so, you know, a lot of the owners that have a lot of horses tend to spread the wealth around a little bit. And Samantha Siegel, there's no one who loves the sport more. She's pretty much at the racetrack every day, whether we're in Los Angeles or down here at Del Mar. And she is an avid supporter of not only the game from a betting standpoint, but as you well know, from an ownership standpoint as well.
Some interesting pedigrees on display in here, and a lot of quality breeders that produce these horses. Samantha's got the homebred, but most of the others are purchases. Well, here's another homebred, actually, or co-bred, Betts Thoroughbreds with Godolphin, bred the Bernardini colt out of the elusive quality mare Song of Me. Phil D'Amato, the four, Dennison, I can only assume that's for author Isaac Dennison out of Africa, for those of you that are familiar, and I'll be anxious to see what Andy Harrington has to say tonight.
It's been 7 o'clock, right around our post time for the seventh race is when the Harrington report comes up on nationalturf.com, and he does an exceptionally fine job, as you well know. I've been a big supporter of his for a long time. But, you know, there's a lot of characters who are morning clockers here in Southern California. Gary Young comes to mind. Jeff at Ward was a longtime clocker. And let's face it, they're watching the rehearsals before the big play shows up on the stage in the afternoons. But that's utter chaos. I've been out there in the mornings, and I just don't know how they're able to separate fact from fiction, because there's a lot going on simultaneously, but they're able to basically sort it out, and the benefactors are us, who are able to read the reports every morning and hopefully help us in picking some winners.
Want to maybe bring up the Daisy Cutter, which is today's feature, goes tonight at 10 o'clock Eastern. Gives everybody a chance to look at that carryover card. Have you given this the full effect?
I have, Stephen. As a matter of fact, although I don't like betting favorites, this is where my single in the pick six is going to come into play, and it is number six, Okinawa, who is invading from the Chad Brown barn back east, now in the Richie Baltus barn. But a couple of things to really like about this four-year-old filly. First of all, she comes out of a very productive race. The first, third, and fifth place finishers from her last race at Belmont in early June have all come back to win, and they've all come back at the same level or higher, so they didn't have to go into the claiming ranks in order to win their next race. I like that, and we've been talking about Harrington. You can see that there's bullets on her resume since she shipped out west, and Harrington gives them very high grades. And Nakatani, I mean, he's probably the best turf rider we have positionally. He doesn't get a lot of opportunities these days. He's only 1-for-19 at the meet, but he's got 4 seconds and 4/3. So he's on live mounts, and Baltus is not afraid to use him. I respect the outside filly, who's the high weight, but we haven't seen her since April, when she won a $100,000 stakes race at Aqueduct. And she's a three-year-old facing older. She has improved since adding blinkers for the Callahan barn. But I think the farther out you go in these short turf sprints, the more undesirable those post positions come. And for that reason, and kind of I'm on record multiple times, that I really believe that East Coast runners, from a turf standpoint, when they invade into Southern California, have a class and result edge, so to speak. I think Okinawa is the most likely single in what proves to be a somewhat difficult six-race sequence, because there aren't many other singles throughout the entire sequence.
Well, the worst part about this sequence, you got a maiden special, two-year-olds with some three firsters, and then others with experience of mixed result. You've got two maiden claimers, which can always be a bit of a hodgepodge, and then you got two starter allowances that are invariably goofball. The horses show up, so it looks pretty daunting, actually, this pick six sequence.
And that's what happens when you get full fields, right, Steve? I mean, the betting challenges become more opportunistic. There's more value within the sequences themselves, and you see that every day, both at Saratoga and Del Mar. You know, the pick fives, the pick fours, the pick sixes are either paying astronomically, or in the case of the pick six, I believe this is the third or fourth time already in a short period where the pick sixes carry over down here at Del Mar. So that's what players want. The pools are big, and I don't expect anything different today, because that 4 o'clock late post certainly helps Del Mar, because there's really no other competition from a simulcast standpoint.
Now, looking forward to a big weekend, and everybody should be following the action at Quigley's Corner. Tom gives you paddock glances and all kinds of opinions, as well as social side notes, whether it's some dining or whether it's birthday greetings for Johnny D and Paula Gary.
Have a great weekend, Steve. I know it's a big weekend up at the Spa, and obviously racing fans are in for a treat from coast to coast.
Very much, and we appreciate, as always, Tom Quigley contributing Quigley's Corner. We are going to stay right here. We don't have time for breaks. James Scully is standing by, and we'll get a few minutes in with James. And speaking of around the country, James noting that there was going to be the Kentucky Downs preview card, four stakes at Ellis on Sunday. That card came up great. And Mountaineer, of course, tomorrow, virtually an all-stakes card highlighted by the Grade 3 Governors and the Grade 3 West Virginia Derby. And James probably has got maybe a Saratoga glance and even a Del Mar play. We'll get some thoughts from Scully. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Let's dive right into it, and we'll bang right through. Start at Mountaineer.
Okay, yeah. It's a nine-race card with seven stake races highlighted by the Grade 3 West Virginia Derby. The top two choices on the morning line are coming in from California, the top two finishers in the Los Al Derby, once on Whiskey and Draft Pick. But I landed in here on number 8, Mr. Freeze. And I'll tell you, he won his first two starts. Keeneland, assaulted Keeneland maiden race in late April. And then a tough allowance on June 2nd on a Saturday night at Churchill. And his came back last time, finished a half length second in the Iowa Derby. And I just think that's going to be the perfect race, you know, to benefit him. Because if you look in the past performances, it's a three-wide trip rallied, and it just doesn't tell a story at all. He was in between horses through that far turn. When they turned for home, a speed horse that wound up retreating in the stretch was weaving in and out in front of him. Another horse was leaning on him to the outside. When he finally extricated himself from trouble, he surged at the winner, who had a perfect trip high north to just miss. Like I said, Mr. Freeze, I think he's going to move forward in that race for Dale Roman. The other one that interests me, Steve, is Lionite for Steve Asmussen. He rallied for third in that Iowa Derby. He's going to be a little bit under the radar. He's the type I'd throw in my multi-race bets, because I'm going to go against draft pick and once on Whiskey. They just, their numbers are low, and I'm a little bit dubious about the quality of that Los Al Derby. Yeah, and then the race before that, the other grade three race, $200,000 West Virginia Governors. You know, I'll tell you, I was there that day at Oaklawn on Southwest Stakes Day when that inside was just a conveyor belt. Leo Frick, I think, was a lot of people's trip notes. You know, wide trip off the turn, had the lead. Hawakam took advantage of the inside to nail him, but you know, just really looked to be on the improve at that point for Brad Cox, and then was off for like 3 months. Came back last time. Really looked like, you know, he might be in trouble turning for home in that allowance race, and exploded late to win. He's really come on for Brad Cox, you know, excellent trainer, winning 5 of his last 7 starts, and he's going to move forward, I think. So Leo Frick's my pick in the Governors.
Excellent. Where else you want to go?
Well, let's hop right to Ellis. You know, Ellis has got 4 stakes, and, I mean, big fields on Sunday, really good betting card, and a couple horses. You know, you look at these, both, you know, whether it's Indiana Derby, Iowa Derby, this Ellis Park or West Virginia, I mean, Brad Cox, Mike Maker, Steve Asmussen, they help, like, make these stake races go. Cox has entries in 6 of those races at Mountaineer on Saturday, and then at Ellis, he has a couple horses in that are serious Breeders' Cup prospects. Will Call is in the turf sprint, the 5.5 furlong turf sprint, and that kicks off the stake sequence in race 5. And you know, he likes Churchill's turf, comes off back to back wins there. He's going to be tough as nails to beat in there. The other horse that Asmussen and that Cox has that I think has serious Breeders' Cup aspirations is Mr. Misunderstood for the mile in race number 8, which is a prep for the Tourist Mile at Kentucky Downs. And, you know, he's coming off a real nice win in the Wise Dan, but there's a horse in there I think has a chance to beat him, Steve, and it's number 4, Parlor. I really like the progress that he has been making for Eddie Keneally. And he's also a first-time gelding in this spot off of a solid effort in that Wise Dan. Like I said, he started off the layoff, 2-time stake runner-up, and he beat a nice field 2 starts back as well. So I'm going to give Parlor a little bit of an edge over Mr. Misunderstood in that 8th race.
Yeah, it's a nice set of races. Yeah.
No, go ahead. Yeah, and then if you want, I'll go ahead and hit the final race, which is a prep for the Turf Distaff at Kentucky Downs, and it's drawn a, you know, field of 15, so really a good betting race to complete the card on Sunday there at Ellis. But last time at Canterbury Downs, I'm Betty G, really caught a breather on the backstretch of that race, and it benefited her. Sailor's Valentine, number 9, was making her 2nd turf start that day. Came flying to be 3rd there. The runner-up came back and won a stake race in her next start. A couple of the horses in this field are back from that race. I really think Sailor's Valentine is going to get a completely different setup on Sunday, where Betty G is going to face a bunch of pressure from a bunch of these other runners. And she's poised to get her first win. I'm going to give her a little bit of an edge. She's a big price in there as well, or a solid price, 8-1 on the morning line, Sailors Valentine.
Sailors Valentine had part of what really Eddie Keneally having a great middle part of the year for those that, and it's kind of dotting the landscape too. It's got horses all over the place, and he's been very, very hot quietly. Anything else for the weekend before we go?
Yeah, sure. I'll tell you, you guys mentioned that Scratch a Voodoo song, and I'm, you know, obviously Inspector Lindley, that was a really good effort last time. I think he's going to get bet down in there, but Mr. Cub, I mean, I would not leave him off your multi-race tickets in that lure tomorrow. He can handle any kind of ground. He's going to be inside speed, and with Voodoo Song out there, he could really get a sweet trip for under Chris Landeros. So I thought he was an intriguing long shot at the Spa tomorrow.
And that's a great point with the conversation we had with Lonnie about who might keep Voodoo Song company, and then who benefits now with him waiting for the four-star Dave. And Conquest Panthera feels like the horse that, you know, coming with the stretch, that he's you know, he's the one that also is going to be out there on the front end. So we'll see how Saez and Landeros, who got his first win at Saratoga yesterday, we'll see how they spar.
All right,
what are you doing in the Whitney?
And I even took a look at that Yellow Ribbon Saturday at Del Mar. I'll tell you, Beau Recall, I was on her last year in that Del Mar Oaks where she just missed. She gets Corey Nakatani. We just heard Tom talking about how good he is on the turf there at Del Mar. I think his only wins this meter on the turf at Del Mar. I think there's plenty of pace with Baja, Mura, and Sassy Little Lila and others. And I'm looking for her, you know, save ground and fire a big effort in that Yellow Ribbon. So I'll leave you that with that one, Steve.
Excellent. Well, James, as always, appreciate it. And be sure to check out the TwinSpires blog roll, lots of plays, lots of analysis. James,
lots
and
of promos,
Vance Hansen.
And promotions this weekend. So yeah,
there you go. No, it's going to be a big weekend. I appreciate it, James. Talk next
Thanks,
week,
Steve. All
right. We'll stay right here. There's too much, and they got a full conversation to look forward to here with Robin Howlett. And Robin comes from Colorado, and originally from further away than that, and you'll hear that in a minute, and he joins us on the heels of what has been an interesting storyline that kind of was happening out of the public eye for the most part. Robin spent a couple of years developing a software program and a platform that was designed to cull information out of charts. He called it Handicapper, and made it available as kind of an open source data piece. And not surprisingly, really, Equibase asked that he desist. And if you saw T.D. Thornton's piece, if you've been following it on Twitter, there's been plenty of conversation. Happy to welcome Robin Howlett. Good morning.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Robin, this has been a topic over the last, I don't know, 20 years, I suppose. Think about Ed Bain and the battles that he's had trying to utilize the database. And there's so much conversation about data use and, you know, what should be available to players. Talk about what your thought was and what you tried to accomplish here with Handicapper.
Sure. So I'm originally from Ireland, and when I moved to the U.S., my initial experiences with American racing were the amount of data that is presented to the average horse player or racing fan is considerably more than what I was used to. And to my local track is Arapahoe Park, and I went there for a visit early in, I think, 2011 or something like that. And you know, I just found a lot of the things unfamiliar, and my efforts to try and understand the sport, the participants, you know, how these races would fit with each other. You know, for instance, the claiming style structure in the U.S. is not replicated in Europe. You know, I really just wanted to make sense of it. I did follow up and try to understand if were there data sets that I could leverage and use to comprehend what I was seeing. And really that industry is primarily marketed and priced for serious handicappers or horse players or somebody who wants to undertake a commercial activity. So I really just left it that like that for a while. And the charts, like many people, are the primary way people, the average fan, would consume racing data. And I was interested to see, could I ever work with that chart data so that, you know, I may learn from it and be able to ask simple questions like, you know, who had the fastest closing quarter? You know, how did this kind of win place show pool or exotic pool kind of stack up versus comparable examples across the country? And yeah, that really was the impetus to do it. And my experience on social media, there was a small but, you know, vociferous group of us who believed that the sport would benefit from a greater access to horse racing's data sets.
Basically, you created a program that could peruse just the charts, right? Just result charts.
Yes. So, you know, over the years, people had, you know, called for, you know, the database of horse racing to be exposed either through APIs, which are a way to kind of talk to databases, or with, you know, new products. So what I wanted to do was, in essence, a showcase of, you know, some of the capabilities that could be permitted just with a very simple product, and to do it in a way that was open and that others could learn from. And I'm a professional software engineer, so I wanted to release something that would be of sufficient quality that, you know, people would both get a benefit from it and also potentially leverage it for future activities. So Handicapper was an app that you downloaded, and it was designed to be just press a couple of buttons, it would start running, and then you would bring over a chart that you downloaded from equibase.com, and you'd drop it into the application. And what it would do would be to take apart the data that's in that chart and display it in a way that would just make it a little bit easier to understand. So an example, a very simple example, would be if you know a chart, the trainers and owners are displayed, you know, further down the chart, and they're not associated with the horses apart from the program number. So now in this table view, you can see who the trainer and owner was for a particular horse. Where there was additional value was, you know, extrapolating some information from the chart. So things I did were the fractional times, for instance, equating those to miles per hour, just so you have a sense of, like, how does an actual race look in terms of speed, which is something that a lot of people understand, versus these fractions, which unless you're, you know, comfortable with the sport to a significant degree, you may not really interpret what that means. And then finally, a couple of additional things like between the point of calls and the fractional times, you know, you could in essence estimate individual fractions and split times for each horse. And putting it in software means you could immediately just, you know, sort on a column and say, okay, who did actually have the fastest final half mile or quarter or whatever. The wagering information was standardized to odds to one, so you didn't really worry about, you know, whether it was a 10-cent superfecta or a 50-cent pick three. You could always kind of come back to the idea of, okay, if I was to put a dollar on this, how much could I have potentially won? So that was number one, was just a very simple experience for the average racing fan to take a chart, which has been the traditional way of communicating a racing result, and seeing if there's a different way to display it and aid understanding of that race. Now, where things got a little more advanced were, you know, spreadsheets are a great tool for analyzing data. For people are probably more comfortable with that tool than any others for interacting with data. So I allowed export of these races or race to a spreadsheet, and in turn you could do some calculations and things like that. And then finally, there was a database behind it all. So if you wish to do some advanced queries and ask questions that are not that may not even be wagering focused. It might simply be, you know, show me all the maiden special weight winners that won by over 10 lengths or something like that. You know, it would just increase your engagement with the sport. And I think really probably the last bit as well was you could then further extend the code either directly because it was open source or through libraries that I provided or APIs. And the idea was to encourage others to take data and integrate it with places that are tools that maybe hadn't had that opportunity before. And I can provide examples of that too.
Hmm. How long did it take you to and obviously these kinds of things are always evolving, and but how much time was invested and collectively, and I'm sure you discovered things that as you were trying to build it.
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of calendar time, yeah, probably 18 months, 20 months, things like that. But really, you know, I was working weekends or nights and really whenever I felt like it. The first year was just simply, you know, in taking the chart data and putting it into a model that would allow applications like Handicapper to be built. And, you know, I would encounter different examples. You know, horse racing has, you know, considerable amount of data, but also different types of results. So you would have things like walkovers, dead heats. You'd have kind of, you know, horses that are racing for purse only, disqualifications, all of these type of things that I wanted to just handle and make sure that the experience for the average user, you know, the accuracy was maintained and, you know, that insights were gained. So that, you know, some months I didn't work on it at all. Sometimes I worked, you know, late into the night. And it really just was primarily for myself. I wanted to learn this information. I wanted to see could I do it. Once I got to that point, you know, I wanted to share it, and I wanted to share it in a way that wasn't so, didn't have such a barrier to entry that only a programmer or someone who's quite technically capable would be able to take advantage of it. I wanted to distribute it to the people I interact with online, that they would see some benefit from it, and they in turn would then leverage it in whatever personal project they were, you know, conducting.
How much resistance did you expect? Because you hinted actually to T.D. Thornton, and even when you let people know that you were going to have to cut access to the platform, you expected that Equibase would not be receptive to this. I mean, how much interaction had there been before you put the platform online?
No, minimal. I had, I think I released that chart parsing software, maybe about a year ago. And, but it was quiet. It was just on a software hosting platform. And I'd hinted to a few, you know, online connections that I was working on this and, you know, shared some interactions and said, you know, what are your thoughts on this? But really, I think, I'm not in the industry. I'm external to the industry. I don't have any connections within horse racing, especially in the U.S. And so I wanted really just to see where the path would lead me. And that, in many ways, sports data and sports systems, often that's how the early developer interaction will be. You just want to see what you can do. What are some of the things that are interesting and what are some of the things that aren't? So one of the things I didn't want to build, for instance, was, you know, something that would be targeted exclusively at major horse players, you know, and would be, you know, something designed that would purely be around making money or bet sizing or something like that. I wanted to just encourage an average person to look at a race in a different way. And then those creative types that they could leverage what I did and in turn build new experiences. And, you know, Race Day 360 did some stakes profiles that benefited from that. I had some people to contact me and say they use it in some personal projects for their academic study in university and things like that. They just wanted to see here's a really interesting domain. You know, it's sports plus a market with wagering, so there's prices and things like that. There's video, media, there's a social component. You know, racing is actually a very well-fit domain for interesting applications, and if anything, you know, the sport hasn't really changed in the way it presents its information or interacts with regular fans in any significant way. Not during the time period that I've been involved, and I really just wanted to see, you know, how people would react, how Equibase would react, and then what kind of discussions would take place. And really, since that article has come out, I've probably been surprised with the conversations that have taken place and what kind of discussions are ongoing.
let's go into that area. And this has been an area that I mentioned Ed Bain, and the use of the handicapper warehouse information bank and what is charged for, there's plenty of people out there that I know there's a subscription, and next week I'm going to continue this conversation in other areas. This is really a sore point, Robin, to a great degree with some people who have tried to do what you did and in various ways, shapes, and form as to, you know, how much of this information should be just public and, as you say, open source. You got a free platform, I guess, to say, what part of this is seemingly a mistake by the industry to not, let a tool like this be used publicly.
You understood. I guess I'll say a couple of things first. I'm empathetic to the situation that Equibase are in. I had a conversation with their president, Jason Wilson, and, I wanted to acknowledge that this wasn't a subversive effect, an attempt to get around Equibase or in some way challenge them and some of the commercial products that they in turn sell. Where I think why Handicapper resonated with people is there's an obvious gap in that there are plenty of products out there, I believe, for, serious horse players, those who, pay significant amounts to enter tournaments or want to contribute to significant wagering amounts to get rebates, things like that. The average racing fan, though, especially one who just wants to interact with the sport in different ways, doesn't necessarily get a lot of opportunity to do that. Now, horse racing isn't unique in sports world to do that. I've been working with sports data for some time, and every industry, they may expose some data, but as we've seen in recent years, there are very advanced statistics that commercial entities will try and sell to participants within those sports, be they teams or coaches or whatever. Horse racing, I think, is different in the sense that, for one, Equibase, which is in theory co-owned by the Jockey Club and the tracks, is both a data provider as well as a software reseller. So, they are competing against potential customers. And the second thing is, I think this is, I've pointed out online recently, and I agree with it, is there's maybe a disconnect between what the average racing fan sees the industry and in terms of its data responsibilities. And the idea that the sport needs to change the status quo, between wagering and foal crops and things like that. The industry has been in a downward trend for a while. It may be stabilizing right now, potentially, but I think there is a feeling among the average racing fan that we really would like to see something different. And the industry's response in this instance, I think, was probably a little bit disappointing, that even an organization that has the ear of the Jockey Club and the tracks kind of felt like, there's nothing going to change here. Our hands are tied. So really, who is going to introduce any innovation here? So in my opinion, I think in the industries I've contributed to, horse racing could expose itself in a major way on a data sense to engage, academic groups that I've mentioned before. The fact that there's a wagering market tied with the sport means that you can prove out a lot of ideas in a very material way. I think the fact that the sport is visual, there's a lot of video recordings, there's a historical component. You can engage with the sport at all hours and all opportunities in many different ways. And I'll give an example of very simple tools that simply just help you appreciate the sport in different ways by joining different data sets up together. So HANA, which is the Horse Player Association, they published this track ratings list, right, which is which are the most horse-player-friendly tracks. Here was a very simple example I wanted to do. I wanted to say, for an average racing fan, over a calendar year, what would each day look like in terms of my wagering opportunities? As in, would I have a top 10 track available every week of the year, every day of the year? Or is there a period of the year where, you know, the only tracks available would be, you know, substandard 25% plus takeout type tracks? And that's, you know, that answers that question. You know, I'm able to do that. I could publish that, broadcast that, and it just educates the person that there are opportunities here, or here are, you know, potential opportunities to improve the sport or the product. And it's something small. It's something I don't think necessarily would come from an industry participant. But once you expose the data, maybe in even a limited way, you know, that we, you only can interact so many times per day or whatever, but you're able to create new content and new experiences. And Handicapper was, in essence, both an example of that and then a platform that would hopefully encourage others to think that way.
We're gonna run short on time this morning, Robin, but you're going to be back. And I certainly want to just convey the appreciation of players for this initiative. And I know we're going to, when I get you back, I want you to talk about what you're going to work on and what the follow-up to this is going to be, because you dropped a hint with T.D. Thornton. But believe me, players appreciated the time and effort you put into this, and it's obvious, you know, you've got the innovative concepts and mind that would be a big help. The industry has called for, you know, the big data innovations, and shouldn't be inhibiting this kind of an attempt. And I know it's a delicate balance, but this was an important story, and I wanted people to know, you know, if they hadn't come across it on Twitter, they needed to know that, you know, what went into this and what you've got to offer. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Not at all. Robin Howlett, and we're going to talk to Robin again and keep this this story and its discussion points. There have been these efforts before, and it's a weird dynamic a little bit about, you know, how much information is out there free and then what is proprietary and is repackaged and sold, and what might benefit the industry most long term by, you know, giving out and having that open source material. So this is an important discussion. The important discussions now are, who are we all going to bet on through the weekend? I want to thank Jay Pridman, Hammer, Lonnie Goldfeder, Dave Grenick, Tom Quigley, James Scully, and Robin Howlett, Howlett, and Robin's name if you want to follow him on Twitter. As well, we didn't get to Nick, but he'll be on site next week, so we'll talk to Tam and Tam 1215. Maybe we'll get Nick to put out a couple of ATR plays. HRN will take you through this afternoon and tomorrow, and we'll talk to you live Monday on a big recap. Good luck this weekend.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Fun in the Sun is ExpressBet's summer treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with ExpressBet. And while you're at it, don't miss ExpressBet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Pre-registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool, fun-in-the-sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete fun-in-the-sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America.
Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.